What if your personal or business brand was so focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you? This is what the most successful brands in the world do. It's not about ad budgets. It's about developing a consistent brand, no matter the industry, location, or size of the company. Discover your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing strategy. This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast, hosted by Kevin Scarrett and Amy Zander, owners of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful, true brand.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Brand Archetypes Podcast. And I assume that Amy here is on the line. Hi, Amy.
Hi. Yes, I'm here. I'm feeling much better than I was last week, so not so stuffy.
You definitely sound better.
Yeah.
So we're going to dive into your favorite archetype. Is it your favorite?
Well, I don't know. I like them all for different reasons, but this one is definitely does speak to my heart. It's why I chose it for my company, and it's the outlaw.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's funny when I talk to different people about brand archetypes in general, and then they say, "Well, what's your company?" And I say the outlaw. I get like mixed reactions sometimes from people. It's interesting.
Right.
But yeah, so the reason that I picked the outlaw for my company was that I've always looked at content creation and social media marketing, and especially with the whole concept of brand archetypes being a unique and different way to look at your marketing and branding. I feel like I tend to do things in a little bit of a different way than most people do. I like to bring a different kind of edge to the table with my writing. I'm also not afraid to use like made up words, like Zedia is a made up word for my company.
Right.
I'm also kind of a swearer. So there's that little bit of outlaw in me. And I also tend to, in general, not necessarily with my clients, because it would not necessarily be professional, but in general in my life, I tend to ask for forgiveness instead of permission. Like I just kind of do my own thing and then.
Well, damn, girl.
Right.
Yeah. So I read a blog post, I don't know, this is about a year ago, that said that excessive and rude and, you know, crass swearing is not a good sign. But people who do swear a little bit, it's actually a sign of higher intelligence. And I thought to myself, well, I guess it's a form of extreme expression. And if you're okay with that, and your whole mentality is that you're trying to find better ways to express yourself, that maybe that is a sign of intelligence. So,
right.
Because I do the same thing. I'll say damn and hell and stuff like that.
Right.
I
mean, right.
And sorry, we just went into to PG rated podcast.
Right.
Sorry.
Well, and like, so I have teenagers, and I know your sons are a little bit older, but my husband and I have always been, of course, when they were real little, we didn't want them to use swear words because that just offends everybody. But the problem with me is that when a little kid swears, I laugh, like, because I think it's really funny, but I shouldn't laugh because that just encourages them.
Right.
But with my kids, we've always just said, look, you know, there's times to swear and there's times not to swear. So like, if you get in trouble at school or with grandma or something, then you're going to get in trouble at home because you were dumb enough to use it when you shouldn't have, right? Like that's your fault.
Yeah.
But my daughter especially, she inherited my love of words and writing and things. And she is, honestly, she's a master swearer. Like she doesn't do it often, but when she does, it's just funny.
Right.
And so, you know, it's not off the table in our family. We just expect them to be creative about it. So,
right. Yeah. I would say the same thing about my youngest. He is, he has a vocabulary. He wields it like a weapon. And like his dad, he uses it for humor.
Yeah.
And, you know, the jester.
Yeah.
But, he and I crack each other up. So.
Yeah. So, yeah. So one of the other things that I really love that has to do with words are really creative titles, job titles. I know for your company, you're the chief peep of Flock Marketing. And my job title is the chief word slayer for Zedia Media, which has the outlaw kind of connotation being a word slayer and things like that.
Absolutely.
And I'm also really into, as well as you are, steampunk decoration and dress and things like that. And my wardrobe happens, you know, I usually kind of dress a little bit edgier and things like that. So that's part of my whole, outlaw thing going on.
Sure.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah. So.
Let's talk about the outlaw archetype. Tell us about the big ideas that you see inside it, since you're the one who is who has become the master of the outlaw.
Yeah, so the big idea with the outlaw archetype is that rules were made to be broken, or at least bent, and the archetype tends to be a little bit edgier. They take more risks. There are some similarities to the outlaw and the jester that we talked about last week, which we'll get into a little bit later. But definitely that whole, I mean, you know, everybody kind of understands what an outlaw is. One of the really good examples of an outlaw archetype would be like the Harley Davidson company, which we'll also talk about in a little bit. But that's a good kind of, you picture that wind in your hair, you know, man or woman on the motorcycle, freedom, you know, that kind of thing. That's the whole emotion that you're trying to convey with that, is just like a refreshing new way to look at things that's a little bit edgier and out there.
So last time when we were talking about the Explorer and the Jester, we also gave people alternative names and words that are also used to describe the outlaw. So let's go ahead and do that here too. If we think about words like the rebel or maverick or revolutionary, those are really obvious, but gambler is also used to describe the outlaw, and we're going to describe why in just a little bit. Or even the activist, you know, a little bit more, you know, liberal progressive concept, but it's definitely one that speaks to not doing things status quo and breaking the rules. So all of those would be, I wouldn't say equivalent to the outlaw, but they're definitely alternatives. They definitely fit in the pocket, and they kind of expand your idea of how we can express what this is all about.
Yeah, and all of them, no matter if it's a sub-archetype or a different word that we're using to describe the outlaw, they all represent being comfortable with change.
Yeah, and not just having change happen, but affecting the change. Because sometimes to affect change, you have to break the rules. So let's talk about the sub-archetype, since you mentioned it. The Jester had two sub-archetypes, and the Explorer had two sub-archetypes. This one has three. So let's talk about the example. Let me give you the names first. The sub-archetypes are called the Rebel, the Gambler, and the Innovator. And the idea behind the three, the Rebel is the act of breaking the rules. This is like Harley Davidson. You're not supposed to speed on roads in your Harley Davidson bike, but there's kind of an implication that you are the wind in the hair kind of rule breaker, and you truly are the rebel. Everything that James Dean rebel kind of connotes, right?
Yeah, James Dean, that's a really good one. Yeah. Do you think Tesla would fall under that category too? Are they kind of doing everything?
No, I think that they fall into the third one, the innovator. Yeah.
The innovator.
Just like
Steve
Jobs.
Yeah, I jumped ahead.
No, but that's a good point. Yeah. So let's talk about it. The innovator. Yeah. Anytime that you are breaking the rules for the sake of innovating, especially in the world of technology these days. So, you know, the classic innovator in my mind is Steve Jobs. When he was with us, everything that he did was he had this very pure and very focused design aesthetic. He wanted things to be elegantly simple, but to get that, the rest of the world was kind of clunky and button oriented, and they just didn't think about usability and interface design the way that he did. And so to get things to be the way that he wanted, he had to break the rules. And he was from what I understand, he was kind of a jerk to work with. Because he was so demanding about these things. So I think Tesla, you know, the fact that he's, you know, smoking a joint on a radio show with some, I forget who it was, just recently. And his
Howard Stern.
It was someone like that. I forget who it was. But, you know, his board of directors and the shareholders were not too happy about that. But, you know.
Just to be clear for my potential clients out there, I'm not a jerk. I'm a rebel, but I'm not a jerk.
Yeah, you do not have to be a jerk to be a rebel.
I'm not commenting on the smoking a joint on the radio.
That's right.
By the way.
And so the third example, or third sub-archetype, is called the gambler. And that sub-archetype thrives on risk. So if you're willing to take risk that other people wouldn't even dream of, then you're probably a gambler. And so if you're trying to frame your company in that way, risk-taking and doing things that other companies are too reserved and they're unwilling to go out to that edge and beyond it. And in those places, sometimes you can find success that no one else will ever discover because they're not willing to go there. So the concepts, again, are rule breaking, risk taking, and innovative change. So there we go.
Perfect. Yeah. So some other examples, we talked about Harley-Davidson being one of the iconic examples of the outlaw and Tesla, but there's Apple like Steve Jobs. Mountain Dew is the outlaw, which is interesting because Coca-Cola is the innocent, which we haven't talked about yet. And then Pepsi is the jester. Mm-hmm. So Pepsi owns Mountain Dew, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But Mountain Dew is its own brand in itself. So yeah. They're more the outlaw. So that's interesting there. And smart move on their part to not be like the other two that they're going up against.
Right.
MTV, I mean, I don't know how active MTV is anymore. It was really popular when I was young, but that was kind of the outlaw new way to view music and that kind of thing.
Yeah, full disclosure, I had a massive, massive crush on Martha Quinn when I was a high school senior.
Oh,
yeah,
of course. Everybody else. Yeah, for sure. PayPal is another one because they were kind of the first people to innovate that online payment, not through banks and credit cards. And there's been a couple other companies that have try to duplicate them like Venmo and things like that. But PayPal was really the first company that came out with this alternative way to pay.
Yeah, I think that the outlaw as a concept is probably the least selected archetype of all 12 basic archetypes that I've seen. Very, very, very few people do it. But those who pick it usually embrace it and do it really, really well. So I think it's an easy one to embrace, but very few people pick it. But I think that that's also changing a little bit in that because of technology and because there are a lot of tech companies who do take this approach kind of naturally, that there is more of an acceptance of this approach. That people may be afraid of it, but they see the value of it.
Right.
Yeah.
So we are always looking for more examples of companies that are embracing any of the archetypes. So if our listeners, if you think of any companies or know any of them or see a commercial or a different kind of company comes to mind when you're listening to any of our podcasts about any of the archetypes, but today specifically outlaws, like let us know, drop us a line, send us a message and say, hey, have you checked out this YouTube video or this company or this ad or whatever? Because we are always looking for examples and we'll add them to our website too.
Right. And obviously my wife hears all these stories about all the archetype stuff. She lives and breathes it almost as much as I do just because she hears it. We were talking about last week's podcast just this morning, and she said, oh, did you guys include blah, blah, blah? Did you include blah, blah, blah? Did you include blah, blah? And I'm like, no, we didn't. And these were three new ones. So this idea of giving us examples, just like my wife did this morning, is hugely important because even if we don't have the opportunity to go back and put them into the podcast on that archetype, we can definitely put them on the brandarchetypes.com page for that archetype. We can blog about them. We can do social media posts. We can include those in future podcasts. So the more, the merrier. The more we can get as examples. Awesome.
Keep them coming.
Absolutely. Okay, let's do our SWOT analysis now. This is where we do strengths, weaknesses, and threats. So why don't you start us out, Amy?
Sure. So let's start off with the strengths or the pros or opportunities with the outlaw. So again, we're going to say that the outlaw is fearless and you have to be comfortable with risk. So I would really suggest that you have an honest conversation with yourself and your staff if you're considering this archetype for your business, because it definitely is about risk. The outlaw often speaks up and speaks out about topics and things that maybe other people want to stay away from, controversial topics, things like that. They'll tackle those kinds of things. The outlaw brand kind of defies the status quo and they don't usually apologize. They're just kind of like, hey, this is us. We're here. We're going to party. You can like it, take us or leave it. And they're not the highest energy archetype. I would say that would be more like the jester or the hero, but they're definitely up there. They're not a mild mannered, low energy archetype. And they, besides taking risks and breaking the rules though, there's this element of wanting to make things better. They do those things because they're trying to make the world a better place. It's not just because they're trying to be jerks. You know, if we think of back to Harley Davidson, I mean, yeah, you know, you've got the outlaw, you think about the motorcycle guy or whatever, but I mean, you know, they're trying to make the world better. They're giving you freedom and a place to ride the open road and relax and things like that. It's not all just about causing mayhem.
So did I ever tell you about where I lived in New Hampshire? in Laconia, New Hampshire.
The
second largest but oldest motorcycle rally in the United States is based out of Laconia, New Hampshire.
Really?
Yeah. So, and I lived right next door in Guilford, but my offices were in Laconia. And our mutual client, Dana Ritchie, also lives in Laconia.
Okay.
And the town is probably 30,000, 35,000 people, you know, small town, central New Hampshire. But for that week, I think it peaked at 400,000 bikers.
Wow.
I think it's down to like 250,000 now. But when you have that many bikers come to a single place all at once, it's craziness. And the reason I wanted to bring it out, because of what you just said, I'd say a third of them are like doctors and lawyers, you know, professionals who are letting their hair down for the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the, you know, when you think about a doctor, this is a person who's trying to make the world a better place. They're just letting their outlaw rip on the weekend.
Yeah. Letting their outlaw flag fly.
That's right. The outlaw flag fly. And the, you know, when you hop on your $50,000 motorcycle, you know, how, that's not a lot of people who are willing to spend that much money on a weekend hobby. But
right.
those guys are. And boy, they let loose. Let me tell
right.
you.
Right. Well, yeah, to add to that, so I used to live in northern Michigan in a really small town, and we had a rally like that called Blessing of the Bikes, where all these motorcycles from all over Michigan, some from a couple neighboring states, would come. And there was this quote-unquote pastor, and he would get up and he would bless everybody's ride for the summer. It was always like in May, and say, you know, safe travel, safe riding. And it was this three-day weekend, and people would set up little tents and sell stuff. And, I mean, this is a town of like, you know, 800 people, I mean, really small town. And so all the, like, thousands of bikers. And there was never any incidents or fights or illegal things happening. I mean, it was all like super peaceful. Like, I think bikers get a bad rap sometimes. People think they're like these badasses, but quite frankly, they're just like big teddy bears and they just want to have fun too. So,
sure.
You know, yeah. So, a couple other strengths about the outlaw is that the outlaw is often willing to go where other people aren't or do things where other people aren't. And that also includes often, you know, sticking up for the little guy. Like Robin Hood is a good example of an outlaw, but he was doing good and robbing the rich to pay the poor, that kind of thing. There's also, it's gaining a lot of notoriety. There's these biker gangs that will help kids out that are being bullied in school, and they'll go ride to the school or whatever. And I mean, I know we're like, we've been talking a lot about bikers because that's a really easy way to think about an outlaw, but there's lots of other examples of outlaws, not just bikers.
So it's like My Bodyguard, the movie My Bodyguard, where you got your biker gang behind you.
Right, there, there
playground.
You go. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Every little kid wants that for sure. Right. And then
there's this this book that popped into my head while you're talking. And I forget who the author is. I'll look it up and I'll figure out who it is, or if someone who's listening knows exactly what book I'm talking about. This was years ago, and the book was talking about how innovative change is necessary in business, that when you look at great movements and great changes in business over the years, that they were rarely implemented by people who had a view of, you know, there are these classical business improvement concepts like Kaizen and Six Sigma. And the concepts behind those are like incremental progress. If you track how you make incremental progress, tweak this here, tweak that there, that eventually you'll dramatically improve over time. What this author was saying is, yeah, throw those ideas out. The really good stuff happens when you throw the whole baby out with the bathwater and start fresh and have radical change. And he gave lots and lots of great examples. So as I was reading that book, I'm like, yeah, this guy is not only an outlaw philosophically, but all outlaws should probably read this book. So I'll dig up that author and we'll include it in the show notes.
Sure. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so we've talked about the strengths of the outlaw. Do you want to tackle maybe some of the weaknesses or threats?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well, let me throw out a gestury phrase here. It's all fun and games until someone loses an eye.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's a gestury phrase, but it kind of embodies the outlaw in that there are people who will look at you as an outlaw. And tell me if this is true, Amy. I mean, you see people, how they react to you. Most people are way more reserved than the typical outlaw archetype. And they raise an eyebrow about what you're doing and the things that you, the approaches that you take, and they question whether it will be successful because they are so reserved.
It's true. And sometimes when I talk about the brand archetypes concept or some of the things that I want to try with some newer inventive like ads and things like that, I'm like, just stay with me. Just stay with me.
Yeah, like, right.
Like,
talk
like,
me to it.
Yeah, like give me a week. Like I'll show you what I'm talking about or whatever. And I definitely, like I joked around a little bit earlier about like my language and swearing a little bit, but yeah. I do like try to read my audience. You know, I don't, I'm not going to like just let loose with a bunch of F-bombs, you know, with like, some clients or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, I've gotten in trouble, not trouble, but I think of people, some raised eyebrows when I'm like, oh, okay, I've got to back that off or whatever. But
yeah. So like that, the reason they're so reserved and the reason they raise that eyebrow is they think that, oh my gosh, oh, Amy's going to take it too far. Well, a good outlaw will take it right out to that edge.
Right. And put your toe on the line.
On the line. Right. And lean over it. Right.
You know? Right.
So the threat is that that's how you're going to be seen. And there's a possibility that you might actually offend them, that that you've misjudged them, and that, that they'll be completely put off. And they may not tell you. They just may walk away.
Right. Well, and a good example of that is like with Apple products, people kind of either love them or hate them. Right.
Absolutely.
Like there's not like a middle ground there. You
right.
know?
Yeah. 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 There's very few Apple groups that kind of like Apple.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
It's like
so that's exactly right. So the another kind of weak or threat, a weakness is not a threat. A weakness is that the people who are not with you, that are they're the ones that are raising the eyebrow, they may see you as being overly critical, or the way that you're breaking the rules is completely contrary to the way they think, and they. Not only are they offended, but they judge you for it. So these are things you have to keep in mind. You know, when you rub a cat the wrong way, it really, really ticks them off. You know,
right.
you're just trying to be nice and you're trying to do things right, but it really irritates the cat. So that's how people will behave with you just because you're being you. So you have to be aware that, and if you remember from our last podcast, I said, I'd rather be wildly successful with 90% of my audience and a miserable failure with 10 than to be tepid with 100%.
Right.
And this absolutely holds true for the outlaw as well, in that people who understand you and get you and want your products because of who you are, you will be wildly successful. And there, and it might, and with the outlaw, it might be more like 70-30 or 60-40.
Right.
The point is, you will have people who are passionately with you, and then the other people may really be put off. And
you have to live it. You have to be okay with people not getting you and not wanting to work with you.
But man, just look at the Harley Davidson crowd.
Right.
You know, you drive up to a Harley Davidson person on what they term a rice rocket. You know, a Japanese. You know, like a what's the motorcycle that Tom Cruise was. You know, like a bike like that, and they're like,
right.
What the heck?
Yeah. Right. Yep.
Okay. So talk about the opportunities.
Yeah. So with the outlaw, you know, you get to. Get people really excited about the fact that life is thrilling, life is exciting. It doesn't have to be humdrum, day in, day out kind of thing. And so everything you're doing is kind of got the edge to it or that excitement to it, which is fun. And you get to provide the thrill or the risk for your clients or convince them that like, hey, no, let's do this a different way. And I really like that. I like looking at things in a different way. You get your adrenaline pumping with some of your clients, and when it works, they're like, oh my gosh, you were right. You know, I love to hear that I'm right. But you also get to be the catalyst for change, going out on that ledge. And then one of the other things too is that, you know, being a champion for the underdog or picking a cause that really needs some focus and really needs some help.
Right.
And then the outlaw is often, you know, brave when others aren't brave. They step forward, they speak out. And you get to do the undoable and achieve the impossible. So sometimes it takes a little convincing, but when it works really well, and people are really excited about it.
Yeah, I think that the whole risk taking and doing the undoable, and because the jester and the outlaw are so similar to each other in a lot of ways, you know, this risk taking, you know, being fearless is definitely a part of the jester as well.
I think that when people see you as doing the undoable, that's in their mind. To us as outlaws and jesters, those things were achievable. We just have to be bold enough to go there.
Right.
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 Yeah. So I think that the that is definitely an opportunity for both jesters and outlaws, that we have perspectives that other people don't. And to them, it seems kind of, wow, that was just so brave. And that was miraculous. That was, wow, I would have never have done that, which is great. It's definitely an opportunity in business if you can pull that off. Yeah.
Right. And as a jester or an outlaw or somebody, you might be thinking, well, I just didn't, there wasn't any other way to do it. Of course we're going to do it that way. But again, that's like you were saying, it's just all perspective.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So where we have, you know, when we talk about the cons and the weaknesses of an archetype, and then in the SWOT analysis, we also talk about the threats. Let me clarify a little bit. Because this is how I see it. I see the cons and the weaknesses as are kind of like internal things. You know, what how can we fail, right? Where the threats are external things, like how can people attack us or frame us, or what can happen to us if we take this approach externally. It's not inside of us, it's outside of us. So let's talk about the threats. I think that for an outlaw, the issue of being able to do things differently and having the power to do those things is really important to them. So if an outlaw ever feels powerless or constrained, and they feel like they're not able to break out and do those things that they want to do, that's a very bad thing for them. Very bad thing for them.
Right.
And so if there are industry restrictions, like Securities Exchange Commission restrictions on stockbrokers or insurance people, that legal constraints on a company can definitely squash this concept. Very, very, very seldom will you ever find an investment advisor or a stock brokerage company that portrays themselves as an outlaw, because they just get so locked and handcuffed.
And if they do, then they're going to be getting into trouble a lot.
or the lawyers will perceive that they're going to get themselves in trouble, and they pull back the reins. Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, so another threat is you may be framed by your competitors as going way too far, that it's not just a radical approach, it's the wrong approach. That if you've got this very conservative, innocent or mother or ruler archetype or something that's not, they're not willing to be bold, they will definitely portray you as too risky, too risk-taking. Right. And that's just not the way we do things.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Right. And then the last threat, I think, is if an outlaw who is trying to evoke change through these radical ideas and change and innovation and risk-taking, what happens if they're not actually able to make change? Then they will definitely be seen as a failure and be framed as a failure by others. And that's definitely a threat to them.
Right.
Yeah. So part of the idea behind the jester we said last week was you have to embrace it. You have to go all in and you have to be it and be fearless at it. And I think this is the one other where that also applies, that you have to be fearless in doing this. And if you don't go all in, your chances of not doing it successfully dramatically increase.
Absolutely. When we talked about the jester, it was like we talked about how you can't just be kind of funny. You have to be really funny. And with the outlaw, you can't just, you know, kind of be an outlaw or kind of take a risk. It's like you can't be wishy-washy about it.
Right. Just because you tear the tags off of your pillows does not make you an outlaw.
Right. Exactly. And don't tell anybody about it. Right.
That's right. That's right.
If you make a video of it and tear it off with your teeth and put it all over social media, then you're an outlaw.
Yeah, but the tag says it's a federal offense.
I know. Well, and you can't be worried that they're going to come at you.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So how do we actually get these ideas into our corporate culture, and how do we get these ideas into our marketing, and what are your ideas, Amy? I'm going to guess you're going to tell us some words that we can use.
Yes, yes, of course. Let's talk about the words for sure. So as you and I know, and we've said this all the time, that great marketing starts with great content.
Yep.
So you're going to use, you know, really bold and daring words for the outlaw, like words like outrageous and rebellious and unconventional, different, radical, alive. So also last week with the jester, that there, it's kind of unique because the jester uses a lot of onomatopoeia words like splat and squirt and that right. kind of stuff. But what's also kind of unique to the outlaw is that outlaw can get away with using slang words. Mm-hmm. And also we talked about like swear words, things like heck of a, hell of a, like WTF, you know, that kind of stuff where other archetypes aren't going to probably swear at all or not use a lot of slang and things like that, because it's just not part of their archetype. The outlaw can definitely do both of those things.
Right. So we've talked about how outlaws will be perceived, right? Mm-hmm. And that outlaws and jesters are very similar to each other in a lot of ways because they're willing to be bold and go over the top, right? Yeah. I don't know if you were involved with our mutual client, the restaurant in Boston, at the time, but they had a campaign. This was about 6 years ago or so, and they used the phrase WTF, big block bold letters, WTF, and they were a jester archetype, not an outlaw, and WTF stood for where's the fun.
Nice.
And they did it really, really, really well, and as a jester and knowing what it means and you know, how they used it. I thought it was very, very creative and they very successfully pulled it off. And yet, 3 or 4 people called them because even the implication of the F word was offensive to them.
Right.
And so the director of marketing called me up and said, oh, we think we got a problem. We got a problem. And I'm like, what do you mean we got a problem? He goes, yeah, 3 people have commented on this. I'm like, and
three?
How many people did it go out to? Oh, no, 50,000? Like, oh, okay.
Right. Well, you're always going to have naysayers no matter what archetype you are or what you do. There's always going to be somebody with a problem.
But that's a great example of 3 people were offended and, you know, 49,997 of them probably thought it was
right.
awesome. Yeah.
Well, and also, like, as a jester or the outlaw, if you're not offending some people, maybe you're not doing it right, too.
Yeah.
Like, that's another way to look at it. Like, yeah, that makes sense. That tracks. I should have offended a few. Okay, good. We did a good job. Yay.
Yeah, there's right? your mark of success, right?
Right. There you go. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So some verbs that you can use for the outlaw, because I like to give lots of options, would be like challenge, overwhelm, thrill, startle, shock, things like that, those kinds of verbs. And then some catchphrases could be off the beaten track, shooting from the hip. There's nothing quite like it. One of my favorites, the times are a-changin'.
Oh, you're such a hippie.
I know. I was born in the wrong decade. I know.
Right? Yeah, those are, I as you're saying all these words, I'm feeling the outlaw love.
Yeah, all right.
Definitely getting the feel. Good. So last time we also talked about how one archetype will absolutely go up against other archetypes. If your competitors, if all of your direct competitors are doing a really, really terrible job with their brand strategy and they're flip-flopping back and forth and they have no focus, that's awesome. But every once in a while, good for you. If you have a competitor who's, whether they're doing it strategically or not, intentionally or not, if they're using an archetype approach successfully, you have to kind of be aware of how you're going up against them and be able to play them off of each other. So let's say you're an outlaw and you're going up against an angel archetype or an innocent archetype. These two archetypes are the absolute polar opposites. The angel is not, think of a little kid playing out in the backyard, you know, blowing bubbles and, you know, his puppy is running around him. You know, you get as soon as I give you that picture, you get this feeling of innocence and simplicity, and there's no outlaw about that whatsoever. You know, that kid may grow up to be an outlaw, but right now they are innocent, and the angel or the innocent archetype is the opposite. Similarly, the mother archetype, last week we talked about how the mother goes up against the jester in that the jester is very risk-taking. Well, obviously the outlaw is risk-taking, and for the same reasons the mother isn't. Mother is nurturing, they're safe, they want to take care of people and protect them. You know, they're way more focused on high-touch customer service and less about this risk. So that kind of flies in the face of the outlaw. And let's see another one. How about the boring guru, where it's all about numbers and data and actuarial tables and information and experience, and it has nothing to do in any way, shape, or form with risk-taking. So those would be ones that the outlaw archetype could play very easily up against because they're so dramatically different.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, I always, you know, when I talk to some clients and stuff, I'm like, yep, we could keep doing things the way you've been doing them, but that's not why you wanted to talk to me, because you know that what you're doing is not working and we need to do something different and, you know, more exciting or whatever. And then we have that conversation. So
get them to break out of their comfort zone.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So while what you just talked about is how the outlaw is dramatically different from other archetypes, there are some ways that it overlaps with some. And we've talked quite a bit about how they overlap with the jester. And it's interesting. You're the jester and I'm the outlaw. That's why we get along so well, right? So we've kind of already covered the jester, but the hero is another archetype that has a lot of similarities. Mainly one of them is just the higher energy. The jester has higher energy, the outlaw, the hero, they're higher energy ones. The hero is, you know, also about bold, often champion of the underdog, and they like to take control and stuff too, but they're not so much of the rule bending as risk-taking kind of thing like that. It's a little bit different there, but they do have some overlap. And then the ruler, archetype, they kind of overlap in where the ruler, and I know we haven't gone into detail about this one and we will in a future episode, but the main idea of the ruler is that they're just, their way is the right way, their way is the highway, and you're either with them and against them and they don't really care. And so that
dominance.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that whole idea of being who you are and being able to let go of people's judgment of it, because there are going to be people who don't agree or don't like it. That's where I think the biggest similarity between the outlaw and the ruler are, is that you just have to be comfortable with who you are and everybody else can take a flying leap. Right.
Right.
So, So those three, the jester, the hero, and the ruler, there are some overlap there.
Yeah. I think going back to the hero, there's another kind of it's a slight twist, but where an outlaw will take risk, not simply for the sake of risk, but almost simply for the sake of risk, that they don't fear risk in any way, shape, or form. In fact, they may not even see them as risky because of the way their brain works, right? The way that they approach life. A hero, think about, you know, the Superman kind of character with the blue cape and flying through the air. That person is going to definitely take some risks, you know, like taking on bad guys head on. You know, that's definitely a risky move that other people aren't willing to do. The hero is doing it for the sake of rightness.
Yeah, calculated.
Calculated. Yeah. And it's like, right. I don't really want to do this, but I have to. Where the outlaw is like, risk? What risk?
Right.
They're not even aware that it's risky.
Right.
Yeah, so, but that point of being able to be take on risk is a part of the hero, I think, as well.
Absolutely. While you're saying these things, I was thinking about, I'm very thankful for my husband because he's much more reserved than I am. And he's also often my voice of reason, where I'm like, these big ideas, oh, we can do this and let's do this. And he's always like, well, wait a minute, let's stop and think about this or whatever. And I, like when my kids were younger, my son is also quite a risk taker. He's, you know, an active young boy. And I mean, I remember one time he's standing on the back of the couch and he's thinking about jumping off this couch. Right. And I'm watching him and I'm like, well, I'm going to let him do this because if he gets hurt, maybe he won't do it again. And my husband comes in, no, don't jump off the couch. You're going to get hurt. Where I was like, I was kind of going to let him do it. Right. Like, so, I mean, I didn't think he, you know, he wouldn't get that hurt, but it was kind of like, you know. So I'm lucky to have my husband who pulls me off the edge.
So you and Henry
sometimes
are the ones who are like, here, hold my beer, watch this.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then Chris drives us to the hospital. Yeah.
That's right. Okay, very good. Okay.
Right.
Well, that was definitely fun to kind of experience all the different aspects of the outlaw.
Yeah.
I hope the listeners got a lot out of it. And again, let's repeat. If you have outlaw examples or really awesome outlaw-ish commercials that you've seen, or you can think of companies that do a really awesome job at being the outlaw, breaking the rules, taking risk, innovating things. A lot of tech companies are out there are probably feeling the love right now. Give us a call. Connect with us on Facebook. Let us know what you think. It would be awesome to hear from you.
Yeah, and then we also have our word list for Outlaw. So if you're thinking that you're really jiving with this archetype and you'd like some more examples and words and phrases to use, we have the word bank, the Outlaw Word Bank for sale. Just get a hold of us. It's $29.95, and you can have pages and pages and pages of ideas of great words to use.
And I said last time I was going to really do my level best to get the shopping cart. I've actually got it on my calendar now, so hopefully by the time we talk next, Amy, we're going to actually have the shopping cart installed in the site and have the word banks be available, accept credit cards. That would be awesome. Wish me luck in pulling that off in the next week. I just got to squeeze it in.
Yeah, absolutely. But in the meantime, if you'd like them, just send us a private message and we'll get them to you. No problem.
Love to hook you up.
Yeah.
Using an outlaw phrase.
All right. So which archetype are we doing next time?
I don't know. Let's pick a fun one. You know what? The jester is I think one of the big four, and the outlaw, although I think it's one of the most powerful, it is probably the least selected. Let's go back to one of the big four. So I think that the neighbor archetype, the hero archetype, and the mother archetype are the other three of the big four.
Right.
I would say more than half of all businesses, maybe even as much as 2/3 of all business, pick one of those four: jester, right, neighbor, mother, or hero. So let's go with the biggest one, the one that most companies seem to pick kind of naturally. And it's the one that we actually will recommend to them to not pick because their industry will tend to pick it, and that's the hero. So a lot of business consultants, you know, personal coaches, small business advisors, they see themselves as heroic and they want their customers to see them heroic. And so they kind of gravitate to that. And in a lot of cases, that will definitely work, especially if they don't have competitors who are doing that. But a lot of people definitely want to be heroic. So let's talk about that next week.
All right. Next up, hero. All right.
Very good. Thanks, Amy.
Sounds good. Yep. Thanks, Kevin.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes Podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.